6 never, ever marks the spot.
I am altering the deep. Pray I don't alter it any further.
Most of the intelligence community doesn't believe he exists. The ones that do call him the Winter Soldier.
I'm Batman.
Dracarys.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Top 5 Report, the podcast I would like to point out. It's called a conspiracy, but it's never called a lie. My name is Drew. I'll be your host for the evening. Along with me, as always, is my brother, Peter. How are you, sir?
I'm here. Or am I?
Yeah, that's, are you?
It's an interesting opening comment. I never really thought about that. So
I know. It struck me as odd when I was driving in the car the other day. I'm like, huh, that'd be a great opening line for the podcast.
Awesome. Awesome stuff.
Anyway, from some of the stuff that we do stumble onto when I bring in the science stories. Unfortunately, I don't have a science story this week, but hey, we do have a handful of news. One big story that I was not expecting to see, so we'll dive into that in a little bit. But we don't have a ton of news, but just one big one and a couple little nuggets. But we do have some watching stuff that I am dying to get into. So I hope that you watched it. But what did you watch this week?
I feel like I'm going to be a massive disappointment, though, because I think I know what you're talking about. But spoil things away, I'm totally fine with it. It's one of those things, if I miss something and you have to spoil it on the show, if it makes for a better episode, I'm totally fine with that. But yeah, I can jump into my stuff. So I had a weird circumstance that came up today. Drew, you actually kind of already know about this because I shared this in a text group that we're part of. But so I work remotely most of the time. Like I work remotely. I work an office job. And, during my like lunch break and, my 15-minute breaks and stuff, I usually like to try to take the dog for a walk. I own a husky, so it's one of those things, try to get as many steps in with her as I can every day. And on my lunch break, I was walking around, and I walked past this family in front of their house that was setting things out, and they were getting ready for a yard sale. So, they're moving furniture and stuff. And I'm just mindlessly walking by with the dog. Like, I had a headphone in, I'm listening to a podcast, and I just look over, I'm just kind of, very casually glancing over the stuff they're bringing out. And all of a sudden, what is staring at me? My eyes catch an Arcade 1-Up Marvel's Superhero arcade cabinet sitting on their driveway. And I just stopped, and then I look at one of the guys who was moving furniture and stuff. I'm like, are you guys having a yard sale? He's like, yeah. I'm like, how much is the Marvel Superheroes cabinet over there? And the guy's like, 20? And then he like looks to this woman next to him. He's like, or were we selling that for 40? And she just shrugs. He's like, we'll give it to you for 20. I'm like, okay then. So I get back home. Basically, I never have cash on me. So it's one of those things where I told my wife, I'm like, dude, there's these people selling an Arcade 1-Up, cabinet over there for $20. But I don't have cash. Do you want to come over? It'll be an extra long lunch break today, but it's really cool if we can pick this up. So we basically drove over and I picked up this cabinet again for $20, and awesome. Like, it's kind of dinged up. They obviously didn't take the best care of it, but it's looks decent enough, and it's going to look really nice in my house. We actually have a room where we have like it's kind of the front room of my house, but we have like our record player and our small like vinyl collection, and we've got like sort of like rock posters and 80s memorabilia all over the walls, and that cabinet is going to look awesome in the corner. The only issue is the screen flickers like a lot, and it's one of those things where you can play the games and it looks great. Like, it actually looks really good. But if you pay attention to, like, the background, the screen does have a flicker to it. And I played it for about 5 minutes today, and it kind of gave me a bit of a headache. So it's one of those things where I'm going to research stuff. I might have to contact Arcade 1UP to see if they can help me fix this thing. But that's my new nerdy mission, is fixing this arcade cabinet, because if I can get this working, that's just going to be badass.
That was today, right?
Yeah, this is earlier today, just totally random. And for people who don't know, Arcade 1UP is the company that makes the arcade cabinets, you know, the arcade games that you see sold at Walmart and Target and Sam's Club, like those sort of like...
Costco gets one every now and then.
Yeah, absolutely. They're like pretty much... they're usually $300 to $400, and they're basically just those like Christmas present arcade cabinets. You know, they're not, you know, not as big, not as durable as the stuff you see in the actual arcade. But if you want to buy like a copy of Pac-Man or whatever it is and put it in your living room, Arcade 1UP's probably the way to go for most people. And the cabinet I picked up, just to clue people in for anybody who cares, it included the games Marvel Super Heroes, X-Men, Children of the Atom, and The Punisher. So The Punisher is a classic beat-em-up style arcade game. You know, you walk around as The Punisher beating up bad guys. And the other two games are your old school, like, 2D classic, like, Street Fighter style fighting games. So I'll probably have more updates on this, but this was, like, such a cool thing. And again, like, kind of a beat-up thing. Like, it's kind of a little bit beat-up. Again, the screen flickers, but I couldn't pass it up for $20. So hopefully I'll get this thing working to the point where it doesn't make me dizzy when I play. But I'm still pretty stoked about it nonetheless. I don't know if you have any questions or comments on that, Drew. I do have a couple other things that I actually watched for this week.
I mean,
though,
the question is, how did today's adventure prevent you from watching Alien Earth?
It's not that today's adventure stopped me from watching Alien Earth. I think it's just like I've just been super busy for the past week.
I'm just teasing you because you're like, yeah, I didn't get a chance to watch it, but here's why. And you tell this whole story about this arcade cabinet, which, as cool as that is,
lunch break at work. It all happened on my lunch break. No. So it's just one of those things, like, the kid just started going back to school. I feel like there's a lot going on, and I just didn't get a moment to watch Alien Earth. I did watch a couple things that are puts me way behind the time, but I did actually start watching Peacemaker, and again, I'm behind the time, so I started Peacemaker Season 1 this past week.
Yeah.
So that's pretty awesome. Now, I actually don't regret that, though, because I actually saw somebody online complaining about the length of time between the first two seasons, and how this person I saw said they basically forgot everything from season one. And I'm like, that's a good point. Maybe it's a good thing that I started watching it this week instead of back when it came out. But I've only watched one episode. It's super fun. It's just super cool James Gunn sort of stuff. I thought it was really interesting, like, at the end of the episode when Peacemaker hooks up with this weird, like, 80s hair metal chick, and then she starts to try to murder him with a knife, and this amazing fight scene breaks out, but I'm really curious the implications of this fight scene, if it's gonna build up to something more. Like, I feel like this woman couldn't just be, like, a completely random incident. There has to be something bigger, like some weird supernatural threat that's going on. But with episode one of the first season, that's kind of my main thing, is there's a lot of characters introduced. There's a lot of threads that are opened, and I don't really know where it's going, but it's still that lovable, like, super fun James Gunn stuff. And I've just been so excited for the James Gunn DCU stuff, whether that be, you know, the big movies like Superman, or if we're talking Creature Commandos, or, like, you know, going back to revisit Peacemaker. I'm pretty excited about all that. And Drew, I don't know if you have any Peacemaker comments. I have two more things that I can kind of keep pretty quick.
Well, but does Peacemaker have does the first episode have the theme song or not?
Yes. Yep, yep. Which, I think it's like after the first like 15 minutes or so, they break into the theme song. So.
And then they do the theme song with the dance. Yeah.
That was great. It was very funny.
You're gonna watch it every episode. And every time you think to yourself, we'll skip the intro, you're not. It's amazing. And you're going to love that song, because that song became that song. Do You Want to Taste It by Wigwam has become part of my like driving in the car playlist kind of thing. I love that song. And the lyrics are so ridiculous when you actually like listen to it. But anyway, continue.
Oh, that's awesome. I'll have to pay attention more to the lyrics next time, but I think the opening, like, theme song, it was kind of similar to what I was expecting, just because I know you hyped it up for me, Drew. I've actually heard other people mention that opening, too, and I'm like, it's going to be John Cena dancing, like, really goofy to something, which it essentially is, but it's still really fun, and I'm sure I'm not going to, I'm sure I won't skip it.
It so straight. Like, everyone comes out, like, they're playing it straight. They're not there to goof around. They're doing, like...
That is a good point. They weren't hamming it up. They definitely were straight-faced, but really good stuff. But no, Peacemaker, it was one of those things where I was actually trying to find, like, it was one of those nights where I was just staying up late. I was actually trying to find, like, a random B-horror movie on Tubi to watch or something, and I couldn't find anything. And I was just like, you know, I'm going to start Peacemaker. And Peacemaker really... in a weird way, it kind of satisfied that B-horror itch for me at the time. It's really weird, but like I said, crazy, like, slasher fight scene with, like, this weird hair metal chick at the end of the first episode. It was great, so awesome stuff. Two more things. I'll try to keep these quick. Drew, you kind of already reviewed this one, but I did check out Death of a Unicorn. Death of a Unicorn, this was like a really, really fun, it was a creature feature, but I know that if you read the description, it's considered a black comedy, and I do like that description because the way that the character relationships go, and the way that the characters are portrayed, there's this sort of like social commentary when it comes to kind of like class discriminations within like our world and stuff. There's a lot to this movie besides just the creature feature aspect. So Death of a Unicorn, I thought it was a really awesome layered story with like these really good actors, whether it's you know, Paul Rudd, Jenna Ortega, like any of the other cast members.
Yeah.
It was super fun, but it also happened to have this ridiculous creature feature aspect on top of that. My only, it's not even really a gripe. It's the only thing I wish is that they used a little bit more. Like, they do have some practical effects in there with the unicorn. I think I was just hoping they did that a little bit more, because especially once it gets to the end, it does get pretty CGI heavy. But otherwise, I don't really have any complaints. I thought it was like super fun. So I don't know if you're holding anything back on Death of a Unicorn, Drew, though, when you reviewed it last week.
Not really. I was just excited. I know you like creature features, so I was excited for you to see the movie, and I was excited to see what you had to say about it. But no, dude, I had so much fun with Death of a Unicorn, and I recommend it to everyone that needs just a quick pick-me-up kind of a movie.
yeah, absolutely. And I do think there is a lot to it when it comes to like the bits of social commentary in there. And I think it's actually is pretty close to a lot of like classical lore when it comes to unicorns, when it comes to like their blood actually like healing wounds or illnesses and stuff like that. I think there is a lot to that in a classical sense. So that was pretty cool. And then the last thing I have, I don't know how far I need to go into this one because it's kind of one of those movies you don't want to spoil, but I checked out the movie Drop. Drew, have you seen this?
Is this the movie where the girls climb the tower?
No.
Or am I thinking so? Okay. Then no, I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. So I watched this movie with my wife, and for some reason she thought that you had seen this, Drew, like that you had told her about it. But this is a movie that's on Peacock. It's one of those things where I opened the app and we were looking for something to watch. We probably should have been watching Alien Earth, but what can you do? And Drop was like right there, like front page of Peacock. And I don't know who's in it as far as actors. Like, it's kind of a lot of like no-name actors, like people you probably wouldn't recognize, and I kind of liked that a lot about the movie. But essentially, it's a movie about this woman who is a single mom. You know, she's like just super dedicated to her work and doing everything she can to raise her son well. And she has a first date that she needs to go on. So her sister comes over to the house and, you know, she leaves. Like, her sister's watching her kid. She goes to this restaurant. The movie takes place in this fictional restaurant in Chicago that doesn't exist. But it's one of those restaurants where you climb in an elevator, like, to, I don't know if it's 50, 60, I don't know how many stories up, but you're going to the top of a skyscraper, and it's one of those, like, really ritzy restaurants with this amazing view. But she meets this guy up there, you know, that she's on a date with. But as she's on the date, her phone keeps getting airdrop messages. And it turns into one of those things that's similar to a movie like Carry On, or it's similar to a movie like, I think it's called Dispatch, the one with Jake Gyllenhaal. It's that sort of like single, single setting, like single, like it's all in one location, but it's one of those movies where this woman's put in this crazy situation, because basically what these drop messages start saying is, like, because at first it just seems like somebody trolling her, and then one of the messages mentions her by name, and she's like, holy crap, and she shows her date, and he's like, oh no, like, that person can see, like, all the names of people on their phones in this restaurant, they're just messing with you. And then she gets a message basically saying, like, we're in your house, you better do what we say. And she's like, what is the call coming from
inside the house?
Yeah. so then the next message is like, check your security cameras, because all her house is filled with cameras she can access from her phone. And she looks at the cameras and she sees, like, her son in her son's bedroom and her sister's, like, reading him a bedtime story. And she flips through a bunch of cameras until she sees a guy wearing a ski mask, like, holding up a gun in her house. And it's basically this thing where she has to do whatever this person is telling her, or else they're threatening to, like, kill her family. It is super, super intense. This I don't consider a spoiler, because it is part of the description when you go on to Peacock.
Oh, okay.
It is a part of the description of the movie, but it ends up leading to the person who's sending the drops wants her to poison her date, this guy that she's on a date with. And they have, like, a method of, like, it's one of those things, like, the poison is hidden in the restaurant, and they're trying to get this woman to kill her date very discreetly so she can get away with it in the setting. And it is super intense, and there's that whole mystery of, like, why is this happening? Why are they trying to do this to her? Why are they trying to do this to him? And it's played up, like, super well. So Drop, if you're into that sort of thriller, I thought this was, like, this was awesome. Like, I don't know if I would say it's, like, better than Carry On, for example, or, I mean, I feel like there's other movies that do it the same way, and maybe it's kind of mid-tier, I guess I would say. It's not the greatest movie of this kind, but it is really awesome. It is, like, a super good watch. So I definitely recommend that one if you want something just intense to watch at some point. So, yeah. And that's pretty much my watching and reading for the week. So, yeah. How about you?
Yeah. So what we heard was all these excuses to why you couldn't watch Alien. All right.
Pretty much.
Anyway. Yeah. So Alien Earth. This was my had to watch. I was really worried that I wasn't going to get the third episode in, because there's three episodes now. What I didn't know was going to happen was the very first, the premiere was two episodes, and then we got the third one before you and I were able to sit down and record again. So we're three episodes in. One of my big, now this is a quibble I have with the entire Alien franchise, and I'm going to hold off my criticism on this until we see how this whole thing plays out. But in Alien 2, or Aliens, the original films, when she's explaining what this creature is and how it wiped everyone out on the ship, they tell her that there is no recorded species of it, so they don't believe that this thing exists. So she's on Earth, and the people on Earth are telling her that this is not a recorded species, and they don't believe her. Okay. So if you're going to take the xenomorph and put it on Earth, How do you keep that contained so nobody knows about it and it's not recorded anywhere? So when she's explaining to the Weyland-Yutani group, they're not like, that's the part that kind of bothers me. That's the only thing that bothers me right now. Otherwise, this is gold. But
awesome.
my quibble could be completely rectified by the end of the season. You know what I mean? That's the part that I'm kind of just waiting to see how they play out.
Yeah.
So ultimately, they kind of open the thing up explaining you have three major corporations that kind of basically run the world at this point in the timeline. This also takes place. Hold on a sec. I did save this on purpose. Alien timeline. Shoot. Where is it? Alien timeline. Okay. So if you were to sit down and watch Aliens in chronological order, it would go Prometheus, Alien Covenant, Alien Earth, the show, then the original movie, Alien, Alien Romulus, Aliens, Alien 3, and Alien Resurrection. That's your order. That's your timeline order. So in Alien Earth, when the show starts, they're talking about the corporations that run the world. You have Prodigy, Weyland-Yutani, which we all know from the actual franchise, and then a third one, which I'm drawing a blank of right now. It basically jumps right to the Prodigy Corporation, which is working with synthetic robots or synthetic people, because you have true synthetics, which are androids built to be the synthetic beings that we all know. And then you have the cyborgs, which are the half people who've gotten bionic parts implanted, maybe because of an injury, maybe because it's prosthetic limbs, that kind of thing. And then you have your synth humans. And Prodigy is working on it's that Fountain of Youth thing where, like, you have a girl, and I'm going to spoil this because this is the opening of the show. You have this girl who's clearly dying of cancer, at least I'm assuming, because her head was shaved like a cancer patient. And they kind of walk her over to this synthetic body and, like, this is your new body. And explaining to her that basically what they're doing is they're transferring her consciousness into the synthetic, so she can continue to live her life and not worry about the threat of disease and all that stuff. And she's the very first test subject to do this with. Obviously it's a success. And then you find out that they make a handful of more and they're using these terminally ill kids because if it doesn't work, they're already terminally ill. But they're putting them in these bodies and they're becoming these synthetic beings. They talked about how synthetics were going to be a heavy part of this show when they were first advertising the show. And that bummed me out a little bit because I never found that part of the franchise interesting, but this has been incredibly interesting and I am like all in and I want to know more about these characters and that kind of stuff. So it's been a lot of fun. The alien ship or the ship, right, is on its return path from Earth, Weyland-Yutani Corporation ship that is bringing back specimens of these creatures that they've went to get. Does that make sense? So they're contained on the ship and something happens and the ship crashes on Earth and they send in search and rescue. Search and rescue is going to go in. And unfortunately from the crash, some of these creatures have gotten out because their containment's been broken and the search and rescue goes in. And now the story's in full swing. I don't want to ruin it too bad because I want you to really, really enjoy it. But I'm going to tell you, man, there are some creatures that are mind-blowingly amazing. Like the xenomorph is incredible, and seeing the xenomorph do some things that you're just like, yes, this is amazing. Yes, that's cool. There's something that happens with the inner mouth that you just never thought of until it happens in this show. And I'm like, oh my God, like whoever would have thought to do that? It's like these guys clearly understood the assignment. But some of these creatures, you're going to see, like, all right, I know there's people out there that are afraid of ticks. That's a real world bug, right? Ticks are gross.
Sure. Yeah.
This has like the worst tick-like creature in the world. It's insane. You're just like, when you see it, you're going to be like, that's disgusting. And then when you see what it does, you're going to be like, oh my God, like it is like these creatures are gross. They're intense. They're violent. They're visceral. Like they're cool. And like, I'm hoping we get more of the other creatures and not just the xenomorphs, because the xenomorphs should be the central focus. But I do want to see some more of those too, because, and there's one that we've only seen like glimpses of, but it's clear that they're building up to it because you keep seeing it on like computer screens and stuff. I'm like, clearly that's some kind of cool threatening thing that we haven't really understood what it does yet. But dude, this is like so much fun. The first two episodes alone feel like an alien movie. And then the third episode, you're like, okay, here we go. The other thing I think is interesting, is there's a very serious attention to detail, in the ship computers, in the background stuff, the cryo tubes. Like, they really understood the assignment when they went to make this show, and it is incredible. I do think this is a very, very minor spoiler, but with them being synthetic beings kind of being a lot of the main focus right now in the story, finding out, like, you know how in the alien movies the egg always opens up and the facehugger comes out and attacks the person?
Sure, yeah.
So the eggs are not responding to the synthetics because they're not people. And there was a point where the person was in the room and the egg started to open and, like, get him out. And they got him out of the room and closed the containment and the egg closed back up. Right? So they're like, no one can be in this room except for the synthetics, you know? So you're just like, oh my God, that's really interesting, you know? So, like, cause they can safely work on whatever because they can't, you know, it's been an interesting ride. And Timothy Oliphant, is great in it so far. Like, he's awesome. There's just so much cool to this show, and I cannot wait for you to see more, because you're going to be four episodes down by the time I can talk about the next episode. So, you need to figure out your screen flicker on your thing so you can get caught up.
Well, I think I might be able to watch Alien Earth before I fix the arcade one-up machine.
Dude, I'm just razzing you because I can. Like,
no, this sounds awesome. No, are they releasing like two episodes a week? Is that why you'll have?
No, they did the two episode. They did the two episode premiere, and then they did one episode the next week, like when it was supposed to release, and then on Tuesday will be the next episode. So it's like, does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so we had two episode premiere, and then the following Tuesday, they released an episode, which is why I watched the three, and then on Tuesday we'll get the next episode. It's an 8-episode season. I looked that up.
I do have a busy weekend coming up, but I'll try to knock some of these episodes out.
No rush, dude. I want you to take your time. I want you to don't feel like you're just like, oh my God, I better get my butt together and get to gear and whatnot and watch this. But it's great. And then, you know how I complained, we were talking about the alien stuff before, and I was complaining about the guns. They never send in Marines anymore. It's always the science team, or it's always the random average person that's like, yeah, we're going to go get the cryo batteries or whatever from Alien Romulus. They're not sending in Marines. They're not sending people with combat training. They send in search and rescue for this ship, and everyone except for like the medic is carrying a gun. Right? So they have your medics that are showing up because they're there to help, but you don't know what you're walking into. So you have like armed protection as they're walking in. So they're walking in with like old school pulse rifles that you'd expect to see, you know, that kind of stuff. It's cool. It's really awesome. And then, man, the way, like, I don't want to spoil it, man. And it's gory as well. It is gory the way it's supposed to be. Nice. for being on FX or Hulu or however you want to word it, is quite gory. They did not shy away from any of that stuff for doing this, even though it's going to be on television. So, and I don't know what FX allows for language, but there is language. So if you don't watch it on regular television, watch it on Hulu, because you'll get like, it'll be uncensored.
Oh,
so
I thought you were going to say, don't watch it with a kid in the room. And I was like, well, I wasn't planning on it.
Definitely don't watch it with a kid in the room, but it is, make sure you can watch it uncensored just for like everything. And it's great. There's a really interesting Peter Pan, symbolism, which I thought was kind of cool. They keep referencing Peter Pan, and I honestly was hoping that they were just going to assume that the audience is smarter than we think they are. Like, you always want to assume that your audience is smart, right? So don't just hand feed the information and like foreshadowing or like symbolism and stuff. So just be left to the audience to figure out. And then you have like, you'll be talking at a party and someone will tell you like, oh man, I missed that. I need to go back and rewatch the movie. That's where like the art form comes in, right? So there's all these Peter Pan references, and it hit me like right away. I'm like, oh, that's brilliant. It's the symbolism that the synthetics are the lost boys because they can't grow up. Mm. And it was brilliant. I was like, that's so cool that they're, it's just the symbolism because like the guy who owns Prodigy, he's like the youngest, he's the youngest trillionaire in the world. And that's why I said trillionaire. And because of his like, and I don't want to say immaturity, but he owns the company. So it was his idea, I guess, for this whole synthetic program. And his favorite book is Peter Pan. And you're just like, oh, because he's the lost boy. He's Peter Pan. There is lost boys. They're not growing up. You know what I mean? So it's kind of cool how that, like just that symbolism there. I thought that was neat. And then where I'm thinking to myself, oh, just let it fly. Like let the audience be smart and figure it out on their own. And then they said it in dialogue. I'm like, come on. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. Everything you're saying though sounds amazing. I really need to watch this. I actually feel like your review right here is kind of the kick in the pants I probably need to watch it. I know you mentioned it was coming out last week. Surprisingly, I feel like I haven't been seeing as much hype about it as I thought I would, but no, sounds amazing.
Well,
like
IGN. Oh, yeah, sorry, IGN, who it's a internet news website in terms of entertainment stuff. It's mostly video games, but IGN, I highly value their opinion when it comes to movies or television shows. If I'm like, even when I'm on the fence, I was definitely not on the fence with this, but they gave it a 9 out of 10. So nice. I thought that was some decent praise from a trusted source, in my opinion. So,
Absolutely.
You were saying, sorry.
No, just like the creature descriptions, like you're alluding to, sounds amazing. It all sounds like really well thought out and like intricately put together. So I'm looking forward to it. And even the aspect about like, basically like three corporations running the world, like when you think about how much things are like being centralized and stuff, just like in our like corporate world we live in, that doesn't seem that far off base, you know.
No,
for us the future, it's going to be like the three corporations is going to be like Disney, Amazon, and Walmart, or I don't know who it's going to be, but I can totally see it becoming like three corporations running everything. And that's really scary, but that's the world we live in, I guess. So
No, it's the show is so cool. We'll see. And Weyland Yutani has only been, I mean, aside from being with logos and you see a couple people, they've been very quiet in terms of characters on the show. Like you do see one of the corporate heads, part of a phone call situation. But it's there's not a lot to what they're showing you, which is totally cool. I just think it's interesting, and I just can't wait to see how this plays out. And clearly there's I think there's more xenomorphs than we realize that we can see right now, but yeah, cool stuff. Anyway, awesome. That is all I got in terms of my Alien review. Everyone needs to watch it. Like everyone needs to watch it. It's amazing. Even the kids, you know. at any rate, let's jump over to news. Let's see, real quick hit stuff. Spider-Verse producers Phil Lord and Christopher Miller are producing a live action movie based on the Archie comics. I thought this was interesting just because of Riverdale. I don't know what this means. Are they going to go like dark like Riverdale? Or are they going to do something completely different? But apparently we got a live action Archie movie coming. Thoughts?
Too soon is kind of how I feel.
Sure. That's fair.
I loved what they did so much with Riverdale, and it just feels like it wasn't even that long ago. So, I'm skeptical, but I mean, I could be proven wrong. It just does seem like too soon. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you. Okay. There was a while back. I don't know if we talked about it on the show, and if we didn't, I don't know if I thought it was big news to discuss, but Disney Plus has said that they want to get into the anime game. Right.
Right.
They want more anime on the channel. And I think what happened is there was a study that was done that showed that 50% of Netflix's users are using Netflix to watch anime. That's cool. Right. Well, Hulu has a ton of anime on it, and Disney now is merging Hulu together and all that stuff. So they're going to get a lot of anime on Disney Plus, and there's actually already a large chunk there. However, Disney revealed that they have a Disney exclusive anime coming called Twisted Wonderland. It unites the slate of iconic Disney villains in a boarding school kind of setting. So think Hogwarts for the Disney villains, but done in an anime style. There's a trailer out, and this show looks really, really cool. Like, I'm not kidding. It looks phenomenal. So I'm definitely probably going to give it a chance, or at least watch an episode or two just to see what it is. But the animation is incredible. It's like definitely my style animation, and then throw in the concept of what they are, and I'm like, this could be really sweet. The one thing I will say to Disney is, you're sitting on, and I'm going to just say this, if you guys want to scoot on over to the mic just so you can hear me a little better, but you're sitting on a gold mine that's called Kingdom Hearts. You've owned it for decades. Make that a show. I'm just saying. Anyway, Twisted Wonderland looks fantastic. The series will, description here: in the universe of the Twisted Wonderland, talented students are recruited to develop and practice their magic skills at Night Raven College. In it, they learn that the school was once ruled by the Great Seven, the major villains that became legends: the Queen of Hearts, Scar, Ursula, Jafar, and the Evil Queen, Hades, and Meselephant. Their legacy inspired the creation of different dormitories whose occupants followed in their footsteps. The series premieres on Disney Plus on October 29. The concept sounds cool, right?
So, like, is it this October 29th?
Yeah.
Oh, dang. Okay. Yeah, we'd be like another year out, but
no, coming out real fast. Awesome. And check out the trailer, dude. It looks really cool. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. That sounds awesome. It sounds right up my alley. Oddly enough, like the Disney aspects I'm least excited for, but the whole like magical school and stuff, I of course can't get enough of that. And I was Googling some images while you were talking. It looks really interesting. I'll definitely be giving this a watch too. And I wonder if Kingdom Hearts, because Kingdom Hearts has like a very big, rich world. And there's a lot of moving parts when it comes to the Kingdom Hearts proper characters, as well as like all the Disney worlds and the other characters who show up. And I wonder if Disney's dipping their toe in the anime game, if something like this, like Twisted Wonderland, is something a little bit lower stakes wise. Like maybe they can do this show, they can try it out for a season. If it doesn't do well, it's, you know, it's an easy thing to brush under the rug. But if it does do well, maybe they'll be looking at stuff like Kingdom Hearts, or maybe they'll be like, maybe we should do that Little Mermaid anime we always wanted to do. Whatever it is, you know what I mean?
Well, Kingdom Hearts is also partial. There's a partnership with Square Enix because of the Final Fantasy aspect, right? And Disney might be using this Twisted Wonderland as a launch pad to say, hey, we made this, what do you think, to get them to say, yeah, we're ready to talk about this. You know, absolutely, you guys, yeah. Right. And that might be what it is. Who knows? We'll see. But this, I don't know. The show looks kind of cool. All right. Fallout season 2 releasing in December on Amazon. They released a poster, which looked really cool. It says, welcome to New Vegas. So if you know the video games, we are headed off to New Vegas. That sounds amazing. They did release a trailer for it. Did you get a chance to see that, or did you not know?
I haven't watched this yet either. Okay. I'm sorry. I've been so bad lately with.
You don't have to apologize. You don't have to apologize on this one, because I usually give you the heads up on trailers when I see them. And so it's partially on me in that aspect. Do you know what I mean? So, season 2, the trailer looks great. The poster looks great. I can't wait for more Fallout. Let's get back to the wastes. You know what I mean? So
yeah, absolutely. This will be really fun to watch once it comes out. But I've been kind of out of it lately, just been busy, but cool stuff.
Sure. Here is. All right. Here's the big one. Paramount has just been purchased by Skydance Media. And you wonder who Skydance is. Skydance, I believe Skydance is J.J. Abrams' production company. Or the one he started. So new Paramount leadership has completely changed. Paramount has been purchased by Skydance. If you've seen Mission Impossible, it always starts with they'll show some logos and then they show Skydance. Well, J.J. Abrams owns Bad Robot, but I think they spawned off Skydance. I think that's part of that whole thing. I'm not 100% on that part of the equation, but our new Paramount leadership, where are we at? The new, where's his name? In the realm of my notes. Sorry, as I put notes together, the name of the new CEO. Okay, Paramount's new CEO, David Ellison. He says Top Gun 3, World War Z, and Star Trek are top priorities for the studio. Star Trek has been too dormant, and they need to get that back into the fold. We have Top Gun 3, which we knew that they've been working on, and Tom Cruise has been heavily involved, from what I understand, and they're just hammering down the script. And World War Z kind of shocked me a little bit, because they're just like getting in that zombie game. World War Z, I think, was supposed to be much bigger of a thing, and I don't know why I don't know why it went the direction they went and just didn't happen for a second movie. If you read the novel and the movie literally share the title and the lead character's name, and that is it. They are nothing. The movie is nothing like the book in any sense whatsoever. And the reason I say that is because the book starts with the outbreak happens, and then it's literally a zombie outbreak, and then it's a zombie movie, right? In the book, it is 10 years post-zombie apocalypse containment. So it's 10 years after they've contained the apocalypse, the zombie outbreak. Everyone's getting their lives back together. And the book follows a journalist who is documenting everything that happened during the event. That's what the book is. So he's basically like, he goes to the hospital to talk to the doctors and nurses who survived that are willing to tell their story. And then he goes and talks to the security guard for the celebrity. And then he goes and talks to a soldier. And then he talks to a politician. And it's basically a series of interviews, right? Brad Pitt's character is that journalist. So my brain, when I was watching World War Z, I enjoyed the movie, but I'm like, this isn't the book. But I think what they were doing was they did the movie to set up the sequel that would be the book, right?
Yeah.
Which I thought was a weird way to do it, but I actually thought that's what they were going for. And then no other movies came out. So
yeah, kind of weird, because I thought World War Z was a success, but I guess I didn't really pay attention to the box office numbers. I just remember it being pretty popular when it came out. But yeah, really good points. And I don't know, it is interesting. World War Z is the surprise there, but Top Gun 3, can't wait for it. The Star Trek news. I don't know if it's that Star Trek has been dormant. I almost feel like Star Trek hasn't been as successful as it should be for a while, because I do know they've been releasing new series and stuff, but most of what I've seen from, and I'm not like really, really deep in the Star Trek fan base, but the reactions I've been seeing to like anything Star Trek related for a couple years now has actually been pretty negative. So maybe it's more just like getting Star Trek back on track, you know, like this is like a, I don't even know how old, like 50-year-old, franchise. Like, why aren't we more successful with this? So it'll be interesting to see how that all changes moving forward, you know, like what kind of changes are made, you know?
Agreed. And we'll see how this plays out. I just thought when you see a merger like this happens, it changes a lot of it's going to change the streaming services very heavily. It's going to change movies coming out. It's going to fast track some things, knowing Star Trek's on the plate. I kind of like that. I'm excited about the Star Trek thing because, yes, I know there's been some movies released, but this is kind of like, hey, this could be really cool. This is a good thing. let's get some more Star Trek movies out, and let's not, and maybe not, maybe they don't have to be in a certain era. They could like jump around and be like, hey, we're going to do like a Next Generation thing, or we're going to do a Deep Space Nine thing, or we're going to bounce over here and take a look at this. Star Trek's a vast world, which got some cool stuff to it. So let's see what happens. Right. All right. Final piece of news. This dropped today. Critical Role Campaign 4 has finally got some news. We had this conversation, you and I talked a little bit about this, but this is kind of big in the sense of what they're doing. So Matt Mercer is stepping down as Dungeon Master. He's going to be a player now. And Brennan Lee Mulligan from Dimension 20 is going to be the main Dungeon Master for, for Campaign 4. The big question was, because Critical Role released the Daggerheart game as their new property, their game. Not only did that happen, but figureheads from Wizards of the Coast, who created the rules for the 2014 5th edition versions of Dungeons & Dragons, and did all the rewrite, all the new updated stuff for the 2024 edition of Dungeons & Dragons, left Wizards of the Coast to go work for Darrington Press and Critical Role. Like, they're like, we're done, we're going to retire. And then they went over there and started like, and now they're working with Critical Role. And you're just like, what does this mean for the world of tabletop gaming? Like, seriously, what does this mean? So they announced today that the Daggerheart rule system will still, they're going to be making stuff with the Daggerheart rule system. They have a lot of stuff planned for it, which Matt will Dungeon Master for with Daggerheart. However, Campaign 4, and I think there's a couple things here. One, they specifically announced, yes, it will be Dungeons & Dragons and not Daggerheart.
Wow. Okay.
I think there's a couple things here. One, you have the two guys who wrote the new rules working for you. So using the new rules, and it's the new rules that they're going to be playing with, the new 2024 rule system. So they're going to be doing that. They have the guys there who are going to be building some homebrew stuff directly for this. So I have a feeling what they're going to do is it's going to be amalgamation. It's going to be like 90 to 95% Dungeons and Dragons. And then you're going to have, these guys dropping in some homebrew stuff. And then you have Matt with the Daggerheart stuff over here. The way Matt worded it is, if you've ever watched Critical Role, they always start the show with "Welcome to Critical Role, a show where a bunch of nerdy ass voice actors sit around playing Dungeons and Dragons." That's how every episode of the show starts. And again, it's a bunch of nerdy ass voice actors sitting around playing Dungeons and Dragons. So that might be part of it, going, guys, this is where we started. You know what I mean? However, I do wonder if there is, contractual obligations. Wizards of the Coast helped Critical Role release the Explorer's Guide to Wildemount book and the Call of the Netherdeep book through them for Dungeons and Dragons. And then Matt collaborated on the new 2024 rule system for the Dungeon Master's Guide. So like part of the Dungeon Master's Guide, from what I understand, was written by Matt Mercer. So I wonder if there's a contractual obligation there. But it's going to be really interesting, and they're doing I'm drawing a blank on it. It's a specific type of campaign. The way they're doing it is they're going to have 13 players total, and it's going to be several different groups, where like you're going to get introduction to every character. And then let's say like four of them are like, well, we'll go check this out, you guys go check that out, where they legit split the party. And then you'll have an episode with like the four or five characters that did the thing. They're off doing this one thing, and then they'll jump over and do another episode with the guys going off to check on the other thing. And like, it'll be this huge, cohesive, multi-character structured story, which could be really cool. I'm kind of really curious to see how that's going to play out. Something like that's always been in my mind, but like, how would you run something like that? And it sounds like that's what they're going to go with. So you're going to have a lot of people at the table popping in and out. So it might be a really cool time to jump into Critical Role if you've never watched the show. So, thoughts?
Yeah, there's so much there. And so Drew, much to I unpack. Feel like I feel like you have a lot of the expertise to comment on this just because you're such a big Critical Role fan. But I guess I kind of wonder if it is what you said, where there is like contract obligations to for Critical Role to still use Dungeons and Dragons for this upcoming campaign, because I do like, and I said this if it was last week or the week before, I do feel that there is like a bit of a conflict of interest there for Critical Role. You know, like they're releasing their own tabletop RPG, but then on their main show, they're still playing the competitor's game. You know what I mean? But, you know, you don't know, like, does Dungeons & Dragons, like, is there a contract stipulation where they have to? And is it one of those things where it does Dungeons & Dragons hold them to that contract as kind of like a, F you, for lack of a better term, for like making their own game? Like, well, you can make your own game, but you still under contract have to play Dungeons and Dragons for however many campaigns. So really interesting stuff, but
I really don't know if that's it though. You know, it's interesting. I just don't know if that's it.
And that's fair. I think I've just heard so many people complaining about like the whole thing with D&D and Wizards of the Coast and keeping people from using Dungeons and Dragons on their YouTube channel and their podcasts and stuff. And I understand that Critical Role is at so much of a higher level as like a lot of these other YouTubers who are trying to do that. But after the outrage of it, like I just feel like that was part of why Critical Role like went off and like made their own thing. But again, you know a lot more about Critical Role's place within all of that than I do at all. So maybe it's not even a thing where Dungeons and Dragons and Critical Role is on bad terms. I guess I'm just more basing that as far as like the feedback I've seen from the internet at large, like how other people have felt about D&D. But again, like I would defer to you on this one, Drew, because you know Critical Role so much better than I do. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
I really think it's cool that they're sticking with Dungeons and Dragons. I do, even though I was expecting them to go full Daggerheart. But
yeah,
if you might look at it going, if Matt's going to be dungeon mastering the Daggerheart stuff, it's kind of like, hey, this is my baby. I'm going to shepherd it. You know what I mean? And we're going to bring this other guy, but I still want to play and I love Dungeons and Dragons. So this is, you know what I mean? That might be the whole point. I know they are doing as we're recording this, they are doing a sit down like tonight. They're doing like a podcast episode tonight, explaining some of the things and reasonings and kind of dipping into some of the stuff. So I'm going to have to watch that later because you and I are sitting in front of a microphone right now, but there you go. And I kept drawing a blank on what they're doing is it's a West Marches campaign. That's what it's called, where you have multiple groups that are all part of the same story. So like group A might actually unveil a piece of the main plot or the main story or something. And group B might be the ones that really end up investigating it because of choices the players make and stuff. But it's called the West Marches style of storytelling, which sounds really cool when you put it together. When you understand like how they're putting it, how they're going to do a 13 player thing, because they are not all going to fit at one table. So, yeah,
right on. Yeah, I haven't even thought about the logistics of it, but I think as much as like. Like, if as much as we can nitpick and speculate, I think the main thing that everybody should be excited about is just more Critical Role. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And the D&D connection, I wasn't trying to necessarily paint it in a bad light, because I actually don't have I don't really have a dog in the fight, and I do like Dungeons and Dragons. I just think like everybody can look forward to the fact that the show is still going to have the same format that they know and love. It's not like they're jumping into like a Daggerheart campaign right away, because yeah, like we've discussed before, all games have like their own systems, and you know, maybe some listeners aren't going to like Daggerheart as much as they liked the older D&D episodes. So that's something to think about as well.
Yep. Anyway, that is about it for the news. Do you want to talk about tonight's list?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Cool. All right, everybody. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
And now for the top five.
All right, Peter, this was your week's pick, so what do you got for me, man?
Yeah, this was kind of random. You picked Jason Bateman for last week, our top five Jason Bateman movies, and I thought I'd hit you back with another actor. And, you know, I was just kind of thinking of, I mean, part of it is just like, you know, we've got spooky season coming up. We're kind of in that back to school time. Both of those things remind me of not only horror movies, but also like teen comedies and stuff like that. And I was trying to think of an actor who kind of fit within that world. And I actually kind of started going through like a lot of the 90s actors who were in like a lot of, you know, movies of that ilk. So, you know, I looked into like, you know, Freddie Prinze Jr.'s IMDb page, you know, Sarah Michelle Gellar, like some other people. But a lot of them, I think, didn't have quite the variety of.
Pete. Oh, see, here we go. This is that thing. Are you there,
Matthew,
man?
Matthew Lillard is...
Oh, dude, you were gone for about a minute. I was trying to cover it.
Oh, man. What was the last thing I said?
I honestly don't know, because you were, you know... Yeah, I honestly don't know. So give me the Matthew Lillard thing one more time.
Sure, sure. So I don't know what the last thing you heard, but basically I was trying to think of a an actor who was in a lot of not only like teen comedies, but horror movies. And I think like the Fall...
Oh man, there it is again.
Right, mentioning like I was thinking of like some other actors who kind of fit into that world. So I was looking at like IMDb pages for, you know, whether it was like Jennifer Love Hewitt, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Freddie Prinze Jr., stuff like that. But a lot of those actors I felt like didn't have quite the variety that I was kind of hoping for our list. And then I thought, of course, let's talk about Matthew Lillard. Matthew Lillard is one of those actors who's always played like, he's always been like the weird friend character in a lot of movies. And while he was known for like so many teen movies, like early in his career, I've always really liked him as an actor. And he's one of those guys who I feel like he's, because he's played like a lot of quirky characters, that's kind of lent him to over the years playing like more and more, whether it's like quirky characters or just cameos. I think he's been in a lot of cool stuff. At this point in his career, he's almost like, he does a ton of voice acting work, and that's both in like, you know, playing Shaggy in like every Scooby-Doo animated movie or series, but also like he does a lot of character voices in like, you know, for random like Warner Brothers DC animated projects. He's done a lot of video game work, but he still does show up in a live action film here and there. And the stuff he does show up in is usually pretty interesting stuff. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on this one, but I thought this would be kind of an interesting list to go through. What are your thoughts, Drew?
I found this list interesting because of, like you said, a lot of the teen movies. I also found it interesting that he dipped his toe into so much voice acting. There was a point where his career exploded, where like... I don't know what movie it was. Maybe Scream. Maybe. And then all of a sudden he was like in like everything for a little while. Like him and Freddie Prinze Jr. were just like buddies that were just in stuff. And then all of a sudden it was like, hey, you're going to be a voice actor for a while. And then the amount of voice acting stuff that they did. And then, and then so much voice acting stuff. And then boom, he makes an appearance in a live action movie and is like, oh, we're going to start seeing Matthew Lillard again. That's cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, let me see here. Did you have any like difficulty putting this list together?
No, I wouldn't really say I had too much difficulty at all. Did you?
Well, how about this? I only saw 21 of his movies. That's where I was like, well, I guess this is a shorter list than I thought it was going to be, because my short list got real short real fast. You know what I mean? So that I thought was interesting. I only have one honorable mention. I don't know about you.
No, I have two for sure. It looks like I've seen about 18 of his films.
You actually counted this time.
Well, I didn't, but I have the paper sitting next to me where I have them all written down. So it was pretty easy to count. But you also have to remember he's been in so many animated and he's been in like so many TV shows when it comes to cartoons and stuff. So I'm sure I've actually seen him in a lot of other stuff. But
yeah, same.
Yeah. I have two honorable mentions, so I could probably jump in.
You gotta go first. Yep.
Okay, so my first one, it's a pretty goofy movie. It's not the movie a goofy movie, but it's a pretty goofy pick. And this one I don't think is the greatest movie ever, but I do really like this one. And that is the movie Without a Paddle, starring Matthew Lillard, Seth Green, and Dax Shepard. And it's basically about a group of friends who go on a canoeing trip, like down a river, like in the wilderness, and hijinks ensue from there. So, like, you know, there's parts where there's like these crazy rednecks chasing them around. It kind of fits a lot of tropes of kind of like mid-2000s comedies, which is right around when it came out. So it's not like this isn't an Oscar winner or anything like that, but I just think this is a good, like, wholesome comedy about a bunch of dudes who go on a trip in the woods sort of thing. So there it is. I don't know if you have any comments on this. I don't know. Have you seen Without a Paddle before, Drew?
Without a Paddle's great. I mean, it's essentially a road trip movie. Around a treasure hunt. Right?
Oh, right, right. Yeah, the treasure hunt.
Yeah,
of course.
Like it's DB what's the guy's name? The famous like bank robber that like disappeared. Like DB shoot. I totally drawn a blank on that guy's name. Anyway, he like, you know, just robbed the bank, ditch the cash, hit it, and it's like one of those treasure, it's like that unsolvable treasure hunt, like no one's ever found it kind of thing. So they're like, we're gonna find it, man. What was that guy's name called? It's a real story. Anyway, but yeah, it becomes a treasure hunt / road trip movie. A lot of good comedy in this. You know, Matthew Lillard, Seth Green, like there's a lot of good stuff to this movie. And then you throw in some weird, and when you like, it's very clear that they're like, hey, we can do some deliverance jokes on top of it when you get the redneck guys chasing them around and stuff. I actually had a lot of fun watching this movie. Dax Shepard, he's in it too. Yeah, good movie. This was a lot of fun. I actually forgot that he was in this when I started doing the lists, but I like this movie a lot. So
Without
a Paddle.
And I might be wrong. I feel like Ethan Suplee, was he one of the redneck guys? I might be wrong there.
I'd have to look it up. But
in my mind's eye, I feel like that was the case. But good stuff. I actually didn't know you were a fan of this one, so that's cool.
Well, there you go. yeah, okay. So Matthew Lillard, Seth Green, as I look it up right now. Dax Shepard. Who'd you say was one
Ethan
of the guys?
Suplee?
I'm not seeing him on there.
Oh, fair enough. I thought he was one of the redneck guys, but maybe it was somebody else. All good though.
anyway. All right. So my only honorable mention is Five Nights at Freddy's.
Oh yeah. Awesome.
This is a lot of fun. This movie was great. I actually look forward to seeing the second movie. The only reason this made an honorable mention is because I feel that as much as it surprised me to see Matthew Lillard in the movie, I really felt like it was more of a cameo role. It was a lot more than a cameo role. I mean, a lot more, because when you first saw him in the movie, you're like, ha, they got Matthew Lillard to be the guy. That's funny. And then later when you like, I don't want to say the twist, but when like the story finally kind of starts coming full circle and you're like, oh, that's why Matthew Lillard's in this. You know what I mean? So, but he's not in the movie as much as, for as important as his character is, he wasn't in the movie as much as I thought he was going to be. So he's not in it as often. And the movie's very new. That's why it's on his honorable mention. It hasn't sat with me the way some of these other movies on my list have. So, but Five Nights at Freddy's was great. Yeah, I look forward to seeing the next one. It's not a scary movie either. It's more of a thriller. I don't even know if I'd put it in the horror category, if you will. So,
really?
Yeah, I don't know if I would. They had some scary moments, but I feel like it was more like thriller type scary moments.
Oh, so. I see what you mean. So it's like the kind of scares and stuff. It's not like that typical horror movie jump scare. Because to me, this one subject matter wise is like full fledged within the horror camp. When you think,
oh,
about,
sure.
It's like, like subject matter, like these haunted animatronic dolls that have the souls of, you know, children inside of them. That is totally a horror plot. So I think this one definitely counts, but I can see how you mean like the execution feels more like a suspenseful, yeah, like a thriller movie, for like more of like a teen audience, I guess you could say. But no, Five Nights at Freddy's, I think it's awesome. I was really, really impressed with this movie. I kind of like casually followed along with the games. I think I was a little bit older than the typical Five Nights at Freddy's demographic when when the games first started coming out, but I did think it was a cool thing that was going on, so I kind of casually followed it. But I was super surprised. I thought the movie was like really, really good. And Matthew Lillard, like, that's the thing, is like you think back to the movie and like he does seem like it's a cameo role, but actually, like, when I was putting the list together and I was like looking at all the options, he actually does have a pretty big role in this movie, because like you said, like he shows up early in the movie and he's like the therapist. But then later on, you like realize like, oh, no, he's actually secretly the founder of Five Nights at Freddy's, who's also secretly this serial killer who killed all these kids that inhabit the bodies of these animatronic dolls. So I can see why you're saying it's like a cameo, but I think this one skirts the edge where it's like it's a big enough role. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, I'm with you. All right, man, what do you got for me for next honorable mention?
Yeah, my next honorable mention, I feel like, is kind of a goofy pick. This movie is, I both like it, but I think it is very tropey in a lot of ways. So if anybody doesn't like this movie, I totally see where they're coming from. It can get a little campy, but I actually went with the movie 13 Ghosts, which I think is a really fun horror movie. It's one of those movies that I kind of just like to watch. It's almost like a good background noise movie, you know, like you have a lot of people over, and as long as they're like over, you know, an appropriate age to watch it, it's a really fun movie to put on, because there's all the gross out effects, there's all the ghosts in the movie, it look like super gory and stuff, and it's a fun movie to laugh along with a group of friends, you know what I mean? One thing I've said about this movie, I've said it before, I'll say it again, 13 Ghosts is maybe the closest thing to a live action Pac-Man scenario I've ever seen. And if you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. But
you know, it's funny. Okay, hold on. I know exactly what you mean. That's why that's hilarious for me. But I never ever thought about it that way. But anyway,
I used to work. Well, I mean, Drew, we both used to work a retail job. So like, you know what it
is. Who hasn't?
Yeah. Well, we've both worked the same retail job, just at different locations. And you know what it's like when you're just like in the back room of like a department store, just BSing with like your coworkers. That's one of the thoughts that I realized when I was working in the back room of a department store, just like talking to people about random stuff. I'm like, you know, 13 Ghosts is kind of like a live action Pac-Man movie. But yeah, 13 Ghosts, I think it's really fun. I'm trying to think, remember who all's in it. There's I know there's like Matthew Lillard, Shannon Elizabeth. I feel like a lot of big names from like the early 2000s are actually in this movie, but yeah, really fun movie that's fun to go back and revisit. So there you go.
Yeah, all right, great. My first actual pick of the night, I'm gonna be able to throw it back to you real fast, because I picked Without a Paddle for my first pick.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, I think that movie's great. I don't know if I need to say much more about it. I think it's just a really fun road trip treasure hunt kind of a thing. Little bit of a soft spot when the guys have to, like, you know, come to grips with, hey, you know, we've been friends, and, you know, all the friendship level stuff that they threw in there, which is great. You need that kind of stuff. But ultimately, it's just a great road trip comedy kind of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. There is those sort of like coming to age moments where like you grow up and you grow apart, but you know, your friendship will always be there. No, I obviously just mentioned Without a Paddle, so I love the movie. Yeah, I think I don't know. I'm actually just pleasantly surprised with this one because I've always really liked the movie, Drew. But for some reason, I thought I was going to bring up Without a Paddle, and I thought you were going to like roll your eyes at it. But no, this is awesome that this made your list.
Yeah. Anyway, what do you got for me? First pick.
Yeah, mine can be pretty quick too.
I do think we're gonna match a bunch, but I do.
That is true with this list. We will match a lot. My one I can throw back to you though, because I actually went with Five Nights at Freddy's. I was super, super impressed with this movie when it came out. Like, I think it's just a really good horror movie for, aimed at a teen audience, because you don't always get that. But this is a really good, like, you know, middle school, high school age horror movie. Like, it's, I was really impressed with this one. So looking forward to the sequel.
Yeah. Same. But yeah, I guess that throws it back to me. Wow, this could be a quick episode. all right. So I'm going with, it's interesting because I always bounce around my list, but this is actually, I'm going to like go in the order I have them written down, I think is the best way for me to discuss this list, at least for me. I'm going with Perfect Score next.
Ooh, okay. Nice call.
Perfect Score. Let's be real. If you don't know what this movie is, this is about a bunch of teenagers that, high school students that, you know, we're all worried about our future. So they go. So let's do a heist film and steal the answers to the SATs, right? SATs, ACTs.
That's one of the tests. Yeah.
One of the tests. Don't remember. Anyway, we're going to steal the answers. And then we're going to go ace our tests and all get to the colleges we want. The brilliant part about this is everybody's in this movie. I mean, everybody. Scarlett Johansson, Chris Evans, so on. Like, there's a ton of people in this movie. There's some really great scenes. But ultimately it is a heist film of trying to steal the answers to the test. My favorite scene in the movie is not even a Matthew Lillard movie, but it's got the kid who's just really into Street Fighter.
Yeah.
And he's just talking about the character named Blanca. And the one girl's like, so it sounds like you want to be a video game developer. And he goes, no, I want to be Blanca.
Yeah.
It's my favorite just line from the movie by itself. But no, I really like this movie. Your reaction sounds like you saw it, but it didn't make your list. So unless maybe
it didn't make my list, but it's been a while since I've seen this one. Okay. But no, this movie I thought was really fun. Super good teen comedy. Yeah, that whole Blanca scenario is still my favorite part of the movie. Part of the reason it didn't make my list is I don't remember Matthew Lillard's role in the film too much. I think I mostly just remember the teen characters more than anything else, though.
Gotcha. Okay.
But yeah, still a good flick. So.
All right. So what do you got for me?
Yeah, so my next one, this is a movie I've talked about a lot on the show. I don't know that I expect to match with you on this one, Drew. I mean, I might be surprised, but I actually went with the movie Scooby-Doo. The
I honestly thought this was you chose this list because you wanted to talk about Scooby-Doo.
I think like, I've talked about it a lot on the show in the past.
You have. You've brought it up several times.
Well, I think
Scooby-Doo, I'm not saying it didn't make my list, and I don't think it's a bad movie. I just knew this was going to come up tonight. So,
well, Scooby-Doo, I do think it's a very interesting film, probably more interesting than most people give it credit for. But this is a movie. I don't know if it's well known or not, but this is actually one of this is an early James Gunn written film. Like, he actually wrote the movie. But this movie, it started out as they were going to do like a raunchy teen comedy with this. Like, this movie was going to have like stoner jokes. It was going to have like bad language, like ridiculous hijinks. And it's one of those things where last minute the studio decided, no, we got to make this for kids. And so they had to edit out like a lot of that stuff. But when you watch the original Scooby-Doo, it has a lot of that stuff. Like, a lot of the remnants are still in there. Like, if you think of, if you think of when Scooby and Shaggy are first introduced, they're sitting in the Mystery Machine with smoke rising up and, Pass the Dutchie is playing in the background. And then when it shows inside the Mystery Machine, they're actually grilling burgers on like a little like you know, George Foreman grill or whatever, and that's where the smoke's coming from. But there are those like subtle like stoner jokes in the movie. There are like some weird subtle like sort of racy jokes in there, and you totally notice that. So that's one of the things that I think is really fun about this movie. It's totally a kid's movie, but there's a weird raunchy R-rated teen comedy under the surface, and I think that's one of the things that makes this movie really fun. But also, like, I grew up watching Scooby-Doo cartoons. I have a super soft spot in my heart for the characters. I love that it's you know, Scooby-Doo's peak spooky entertainment for kids, and I've always loved that. And when it comes to Matthew Lillard, like, he just killed it as Shaggy in this movie. Like, he did so well in that role. He really, like, epitomized Shaggy on screen, and I feel like because of that, and I don't know if this is the case, but I feel like this might have, in a weird way, launched his voice acting career, because I feel like Warner Brothers, like, you know, they're like, okay, we need somebody to voice Shaggy for the next Scooby-Doo, like, animated series or whatever. Why don't we just get the guy who did such a good job in the live-action version? Why don't we just cast him? And then, you know, after doing a couple of those projects, you know, Warner Brothers like, well, we need somebody in this Batman movie. Like, we need a random character. Let's get Matthew Lillard again. And like we've seen over the years, he's done so much animated stuff at this point. So, yeah, Scooby-Doo, I've brought it up so many times, but I do think this movie is a very interesting one, especially when you go into the behind the scenes aspects of it.
Yeah. So Scooby-Doo, this is another one with. Like, it's that thing where, like, that era of the cast members, it was like boom, like everybody, Freddie Prinze Jr., Linda Carlini, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Matthew Lillard, like, hey, let's get, like, all these people are friends, just get them in the same movie together.
Yeah.
Which it just exploded with a lot of their careers. Yeah, I've only watched the original Scooby-Doo movie, or the first one, that is. But yeah, I think you're right on the voice actor thing, because while I was scrolling through the filmography of Matthew Lillard, it was like, oh, hey. He voiced Shaggy several times. It's like cameo role type stuff. And then like, yeah. Even when like there were like video games and stuff where like they needed Shaggy that he did the voices for and stuff. So, you know, yeah,
cool stuff. It's actually kind of cool with his career because he's like Matthew Lillard. Like he always played that weird teenage friend, like in every movie, he was like the weird, like offbeat teenage guy. And you can't play that guy forever. But you can do that voice forever. So it's actually kind of cool that his career turned out that way. But yeah, what do you got next?
Well, I'm rolling into one of those movies where like every iconic staple of that like late 90s, early 2000s prom type movies. This kind of like defined a generation in terms of like chick flick, teen comedy nonsense. But that would be She's All That.
Oh,
and
awesome.
You know, this movie was great. This not only, first off, the movie's great. The characters are great. The cast is great. The music in it is great. It, like I said, it kind of defined a certain like era of generational type stuff. You know, it's the way it was all put together. It was just, it's really, really good. It does, for the most part, the movie holds up, but it also became the central basis for the parody film Not Another Teen Movie. And that I also think is interesting just because, you know, like, you know, when National Lampoon's was doing all their parody movies and they were like, hey, we're gonna do Not Another Teen Movie, and ultimately this became the central basis to it, and it's because of the popularity of the film. And Matthew Lillard, he's the MTV Real World guy, that like the MTV Real World douchebag type character.
Yeah.
in this movie, which is just hysterical because at first you're just like, ha, that's a cameo, and then he becomes much more of a character in the movie than you'd think. But yeah,
absolutely. I love the party scene where Matthew Lillard's there and he's with, it's like Freddie Prinze Jr.'s ex-girlfriend is dating him, but he is such like an oblivious, like D-bag the whole scene, and like there's the whole part where he's like dancing, and he does not give a crap about this girl who's dating him. He's just there to have a good time on his own, and it's so hard to explain, but just the way he dances, and like he's just such an obnoxious force in that movie that's like really entertaining to watch. So yeah, good call with this one.
Obnoxious force is the best way of wording that.
absolutely.
Anyway, what do you got for me?
Yeah, so my next one is a movie that I don't think I've ever mentioned on the podcast, but I actually really, really like this, or I really love this film. I actually went with the movie SLC Punk. Have you seen this, Drew?
You and I have not ever discussed this movie, but I haven't seen this movie in a very, very long time.
right on. This is one of those movies that, like, I think it's one of those things that, like, I grew up, it was like around like late middle school, early high school. I got like really into punk rock, and I was aware of this movie for a long time. Like I'd see it at the video store and stuff, but I never felt, you know, you go to the video store with your parents as a kid, and I didn't think my mom was really going to want to watch SLC Punk with me, but you know, at some point you actually get the chance, you rent it and you watch it. And SLC Punk,
they're going, really?
Yeah. What is the point of this crap? Yeah. What were you saying, though?
No, I was just saying that because you made the reference to mom not wanting to watch it with you and rent it because she's like, oh, why not? And then there's mom sitting on the couch like, why are we watching this? Anyway.
Exactly. I haven't watched this movie with our mom, but I just thought I'd mention that. Just the conundrum of, yeah, my parents aren't going to watch that. I'll have to rent it on my own sometime. But this movie, it's an indie comedy, essentially. And it's about, you have Matthew Lillard, who plays this punk rocker named Steve-O. And it's basically like about him and his friends living in Salt Lake City. They live in Utah. They live in basically like Mormon territory. And they're these like punk rock kids in the 80s or whatever. And it's just kind of about their life. And the movie has a very like slice of life feel. And I don't know if I mean that like in the anime slice of life sense, but like in sort of the sense that like, yeah, we're going to show their life and there's going to be different storylines and there's going to be different drama that plays out. But it's very real world and it's very coming of age, but it's not, I don't know if I would consider it a movie where it's like one of those like plots where it's like, we need to do this and this and this and get from point A to point B. It's more just about the characters and their interaction and their growth. And so like the movie is written and directed by this guy, James Merendino. And, as far as I know, this is basically like autobiographical, you know, because I remember watching the movie and there's moments where like, you know, like some of the characters are maybe more violent or ridiculous than maybe I thought, you know, like most of the punk rockers I knew in high school or whatever acted like. But then I was also, you also have to remember, like, this is this specific guy's point of view. It's where he came from, and he's basically just telling his story. And the story has a really cool development, in my opinion, because you're following this guy, Steve-O, who's this, you know, ridiculous, obnoxious punk rocker guy. But he's also really cool. He's endearing. He's fun. But he is very obnoxious about his love for this music and for the subculture. And it's a really cool movie when you watch. And by the end, he actually finds his place in the world in a weird way. And he kind of realizes that I feel like I'm spoiling a little bit, but he realizes at the end that it's almost like the last line of the movie. He realizes he can cause more havoc within the system than outside of it. So he can actually get a job. Like at the end of the movie, he's pursuing like a law degree because he wants to cause more havoc within the system. He wants to fight the man, but he realized he can do it better becoming like a lawyer than he could as this like, you know, snotty punk kid who's like off on the side, who's not really accomplishing anything. And there's some really cool, poignant aspects to that. So yeah. I don't know if you have any comments on this one, Drew, but I always really like this movie. So
I don't have any real comments to add to this, only because I haven't seen it in such a long time, but I do remember really enjoying it.
Yeah.
So, you know, and you kind of said everything that I probably would have said. I just, man, I haven't seen this movie in forever.
There's also a really great meme about this movie because it is so much about punk rock. There's a great meme where it shows like it says like watches SLC punk once, and it's like a picture of a kid with like, you know, the mohawk and the leather jacket and spikes and stuff. Like watches the movie once, now he's an expert on punk rock. I always thought that was a funny thing too. But yeah, what do you got for us?
All right, the next one I can be very short on because we talk about it quite a bit. It's one of my favorite scary movies, and that would be Scream. This is one of those. It's one that has it kind of like launched careers for a lot of people. It's one of the most, I would say probably one of the more famous slasher films out there, because Ghostface is just one of those giant, you know, personalities in terms of like the horror movie monster slasher group, if you will, like Freddy and Jason and stuff. It's an incredibly iconic image or costume. And then you throw in all the characters. Matthew Lillard is great in the movie. I don't want to say too much about his character because I don't want to ruin the movie itself. Even okay, take the horror movie element out of it. Take the slasher serial killer stuff out of the equation. It's a mystery film, and it doesn't matter right. Who I talk about, whether it's Skeet Ulrich, Nev Campbell, Matthew Lillard, or you know, David Arquette or Courtney Cox or whoever. It's comes down to a whodunit kind of a movie. And who's the killer? So if you've never seen the movie, I don't want to say too much about any character in the movie, but Matthew Lillard was fantastic. And yeah, Scream. I love this movie. Everyone should see it. So there you go.
Yeah, great call. Well, we totally matched on this one. So
I figured we would have. So,
but yeah, you're right.
I figured we would have.
It's a great movie. I love the, we don't always talk about how it is a whodunit mystery. And that is a format that every Scream movie has continued since this movie came out. And it's so much fun because it is a great slasher. Ghostface is like very iconic, like you said. Like this movie's kind of like a benchmark slasher in a lot of ways. But yeah, it's that whodunit, it's that iconic horror, and it's also like I've talked about it so many times, but it's that meta commentary on horror cinema as a whole as well. You know, it's a horror movie that's also commenting on every other horror movie in really subtle, cool meta sort of ways. So Scream, we love it on this podcast. We've talked about it probably too much, but yeah, great pick, of course.
They watch the same, all they talk about is the same movies. All right. When you said Matthew Lillard, this is the very first movie I thought of. It was the first movie I wrote down. I didn't even have to look at a list. It was making my list no matter what. This movie is ridiculous on all scales whatsoever. It does not hold up in any way aside from my nostalgia, because at the time that it came out, it was incredibly far-fetched and ridiculous. And as technology has moved and as we've learned more about this subculture, it has also proven how unrealistic it is at the same time. But Matthew Lillard is phenomenal in this movie. This movie is just a fun movie from top to bottom. So, and I do think it holds up in the sense that it's such a fun movie, no matter how ridiculous it is. But yeah, it's more on my nostalgia. But this is the movie Hackers.
Absolutely.
And I figured you and I would have matched on this one, but this is incredibly a ridiculous movie about computer hackers and the war they're waging with the FBI and, you know, hack the planet. And the subculture underground craziness, Matthew Lillard, Angelina Jolie. This is like the one of the movies that people were like, who's Angelina Jolie? This is like one of those first ones for her. Johnny Lee Miller. This movie's great. Your take on Hackers. I could probably do a whole show on Hackers if I really want to. I haven't seen the movie in a while, but it is, when I say ridiculous, it's kind of like they take the hacker culture, and yes, there is some punk rock element to it, but I think they took it to the extreme in the sense that they just turned it up to 11 and none of us realized it. There are things they do with computers that at the time, I don't think you could do with computers. Sure. I know that desktop screens probably don't look like the way they have it set up. The way they, you know, there had to have been some realism to it. But there's also the far-fetched where Hollywood's like, we can't show them how real this shit is yet because we don't, one, we don't know, and two, we don't want to be wrong. So we'll just do our own thing. And it just got strange. But ultimately, like, it's still a fun movie. And if you take out the technology aspect of it, a lot of the story stuff, I think, still holds up. But yeah, what do you, there you go. What
yeah,
do you
well,
got?
Yeah, well, we matched on this okay. pick, of course.
I figured.
Hackers is a great movie. It is very much so a time capsule. I feel like this movie perfectly encapsulates, like, everything that was cool in the mid-90s, whether it is, like, that sort of, like, punk rock element you were talking about, Drew, whether it's all the characters riding rollerblades, whether it's just the aesthetics are so much in a time capsule. And yes, like, the way that computers and technology works is not at all well represented in this movie, but it does hold up. Like what you're saying, it's the entertainment value. It is the story. It is the characters. They stick with you, and the movie is just so much fun. But while you were talking about it, I was kind of thinking, like, I know so many people who love this movie, and I know even, like, people who have gone into IT as a career who love this movie. And even though, like, so much of the technology stuff isn't accurate, they still love this film. I haven't really shown this movie to, it'd be interesting to, like, get, like, somebody in, like, Gen Z, like, what's their take on this movie? Cause I don't know, like, any, like most of the people I know who like this movie are, like, my age and older. And I actually do wonder how this movie would hold up to a younger generation. Like, is a kid in his 20s, are they going to watch it and are they going to like it, or are they going to just think it's ridiculous and stupid? I'm really curious about that. But I do think Hackers, like, entertainment value is through the roof. The movie is iconic in, like, kind of a weird sort of way, but it is such a fun time capsule of a film. Yeah, I don't know. I really love this one. Oh, the last thing I was going to say is I did mention the aesthetics. But the aesthetics and, like, the costume choices in this movie and stuff are also very interesting. When you talk about, like, retro futuristic as a vibe, everybody always goes back to, like, the 80s and they think about, like, you know, the way the future was depicted in the 80s. But I feel like Hackers, like, that movie has a weird, like, 90s retro futuristic aspect to it, because all the hackers, like, dress in this weird, like, somewhat cyberpunk way, even though they're just, like, you know, inner city school kids, you know, like, they're just, like, regular teenage kids, but for some reason they're all wearing, like, weird biker jackets that look like they're from the future and stuff like that. And I always thought that was really interesting too. Like, the fashion choices are definitely, like, super notable in this one. So yeah, good stuff. Great movie.
Yeah. Hackers, man. So good. Anyway, that brings us to the end of the list. It is my turn. So we've been doing this show for a very long time, and every now and then I have to look at our giant spreadsheet that I keep, and I have to scroll through it. And I went through the list twice before I was sold on the fact that we haven't done this yet, which is a surprise to me. but I want to talk about our favorite space battles.
Okay.
We've talked science fiction and stuff like that, and we've talked space stuff here and there, but we've never talked space battle sequences. You do not have to stick to movies. If you jump into television or anime or whatever, like, there's some cool space battles out there, and I kind of had to make sure I could do five myself. I'm like, could I pick five without even, could I just name five space battles without looking up before I did the research to actually put together my list? And I was like, oh, I definitely could. So, yeah.
No, you totally can, because there's more than five Star Wars films.
I know, which so Star Wars like could be very movie. Heavy. We could be talking a lot about Star Wars next week, but there are other franchises and space stuff out there that we can dip into. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway. This is really fun, because we did do our top five battle scenes list. But I think when we did that, we were all thinking, like, you know, we're like the Battle of the Bastards or Lord of the Rings or whatever. And it is really fun to think about space combat, whether it's like dogfighting or even if it's more like jetpack, like, you know, hand to hand combat in space. Like, that's an interesting thing to think about. So, yeah, this is going to be a really fun list to put together.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what we'll be talking about next week is space battles. And then whatever news plops up, and hopefully Peter gets a chance to watch Alien. so anyway, Peter,
I'm hoping there's a space battle in there for me to put on my list.
sure. anyway, Peter, we're kind of at the end of the list. Do you want to throw this one in the can?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Great. Everybody, do us all a favor. Check out our website, top5report.com. There you'll find links to our social media, along with a link to our email, top5report@gmail.com. You can follow us. You can We are on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Amazon, Audible. You can subscribe to us in those places. If you do, you will not miss a single episode. You can also leave us a review. We love those 5 stars, but we understand criticism because it helps us. It makes us get better, and it makes the words we say feel important. I am stumbling over this. I apologize. Anyway, you can follow me personally on Twitter and Instagram at Drew3927. Peter, what about you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at NinjaPierre, and that's where I'll be reminding you that if you don't give me a follow, that's universally stupid, man.
All right, everybody, for the Top 5 Report, I'm Drew.
I'm Peter.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.